Hello there, friends. Andrea with the Bangs here, and the host of the She Wonders Why podcast. For this week, I have the absolute pleasure of interviewing Justin Brierley, who is himself an interviewer. I saw Justin interview Jordan Peterson back in 2018. He was hosting a discussion between Peterson and another individual who I can't recall her name, but we talk about it in the interview. They had opposing views on some things. And that is what Justin does, is his podcast and his show features big conversations. And it's actually called The Big Conversation, but it's under the umbrella of Unbelievable. If you are interested in seeing differing views on large topics having to do with meaning and faith or lack of faith or atheism versus theism and whatnot, tune in to Justin's channel called Unbelievable on YouTube. There are some fantastic discussions there. So I start off by really picking Justin's interviewer side because I selfishly wanted to pick up some tips. And also, he's so good at his job. People very often praise him in the comments about how he can just really highlight his guests. So we discuss this along with why is it important to have these types of conversations? What is it doing? Who is it helping? Is it the best format, etc.? It was just a wonderful time. I really, really enjoyed speaking with Justin. I'm so grateful that he said yes to come on my show, and I hope you guys enjoy it. As always, please do not forget to subscribe if you are new. Also, I need to request, if you are listening to this in the podcast form on Apple Podcasts, please remember to give me a little 5-star rating along with a nice little review, because I always forget about the podcast and it would help. Any 5-star review would help. It would just help me to, you know, move above the bajillions of podcasts. The more 5-stars you have, the better you do. Anyway, you know the drill. Anywho, without further ado, here is my discussion with Justin. So I'm trying to like get focused to like actually get started. This has really been, you've been lovely to chat with, Justin. Just
no,
just while I've been setting up. Also, I need to ask about the drums. I'm sorry. I noticed those in the past. I'm just like, okay, what is going on there?
When I set up this sort of spare room as a studio of sorts, I thought, it'd be nice to have something interesting in the background apart from books. And we had these big conga drums that a friend had given us who lives in Scotland, of all places. Oh. So I just thought, I'll put them in. And
just like a sort of decorative piece.
Kind of decorative though. We have used them for things before.
We've had a lot of luau's, you know.
I'm married to Lucy. She's the minister of a church. And at the start of lockdown, we had... We couldn't go into our church to do church. We did all of our services from our front room, from our sitting room. Okay. And so my son plays drums and things. So I would play guitar.
Oh.
We'd take these bongos through. He'd be on the bongos.
Oh, I love that. That's great. I find that people who don't go to church or attend, like, you don't sing. You know, like, yeah, you don't party. It is something that is interesting when you think about it. A friend of mine is, who's in the UK, was thinking about attending because she wants to join the choir.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And she's like, you know, we just never sing. Who sings anymore? So you're like, you know, attend and participate and see where it leads.
Sure.
Speaking
for sure.
of seeing where things lead. So Justin Brierley, thank you so much for coming on my show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
So can we do a little bio initially? Because sometimes I'm like, you've got the dream job. but then sometimes I'm like, maybe not. When you get in sticky situations in these debates. So But that'll be for later. I'm gonna definitely go there. Fine. But initially, yeah, I just want to know how you started off in the first place in this sort of a job.
Sure. Well, it all started back in 2002, I think it was, when I first pitched up at Premier Christian Radio in the UK, and just asked if I could just have some work experience. I was fresh out of university. I'd got married with my wife Lucy. We'd been on a bit of a gap year. As she was starting to train for ministry in the church, and I was looking for a job, any job really, perhaps in journalism. I'd enjoyed a stint doing some radio as a bit of work experience. So I got a break with Premier Christian Radio in the UK, started just, you know, doing the sort of basics of training myself in radio, journalism, interviewing. And that led about 3 years in to me starting my own show, Unbelievable, which has been going for over 15 years now. So and it really hasn't changed much in 15 years, in all honesty. It's me sitting down with a Christian and often a non-Christian to discuss and debate belief in God, whether Christianity is true, and all manner of other things, ethics, philosophy, history, science. And that's been where it's, you know, where it's gone. And it's the interesting thing about it is really though, what started as a radio show once a week, just for really Christians, because that's, you know, who the audience is for Premier Christian Radio in the UK. Once we started podcasting a couple of years in, and we were quite early adopters with the podcasting thing.
Oh,
we
good
suddenly
for
started
you guys,
to get
along with Joe Rogan, right?
We're not quite as big as Joe Rogan.
No, but getting it, you were ahead of the game there.
But what that did was actually it brought in a much wider, more diverse audience. So a lot of non-Christians, atheists, agnostics, skeptics started listening as well, because we were having some quite big names on, you know, the Richard Dawkins and that kind of thing. Mm. And that led to a really interesting sort of new dynamic for the show, where I was aware that the listening audience was not just Christians interested in the conversations, but a lot of non-Christians. And that led to a really fruitful conversation. You know, I was receiving lots of emails from both believers and non-believers, and it was a great way of fostering my own relationship with a wide variety of people, getting new people on the show, mm-hmm. having interesting conversations. And it's grown from there, really. So we started doing a conference each year where we invite Christians to kind of talk about some of the big issues in faith, live events where we would have these conversations on stage. I wrote a book about my experiences and my case for faith, and that came out a few years ago. And we started doing video as well. Mm-hmm. You know, we were later adopters, certainly on the YouTube front. Right. But that's grown quite quickly since we started that about 3 years ago. So it's been an exciting journey, and I've been really pleased the way it's kind of gone global, really, with people listening all over the world now.
Well, so. Okay, so I know that I'm just trying to think of which direction. So I want to say you've been pretty praised for how you were able to, it's a funny thing, so like disappear and let your guests really take the stage, yet you are there very much, but mm-hmm. you're not. You know, it's a strange thing of as an interviewer that you actually want to less of me, more of them, yeah. kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and I know how the British aren't fond of being praised and getting compliments, so I apologize. But, that's you know, I've just read some of the YouTube comments, and yeah, you get a lot of you really highlight your guests and are able to do that. And I've noticed that because I'm like, I'm trying to pick up tricks, you know, the tricks of the trade with my little novice basement studio here, you know. So how do you do that? How do you highlight your guests and yet you're present, but only when needed?
Yeah, I think that is one of the tricks of being a good interviewer is letting the guests do the talking as far as possible. Now, I don't get this right all the time. There's been plenty of occasions when I've been criticized by listeners or viewers for stepping in too much. Okay. And I'm sure I do that from time to time. In a way, because most of the shows I do are me moderating a discussion between two people, in a way, you know, the reason they're there is for them to talk to each other. So I just want to facilitate that, and I don't want to get in the way. And I certainly don't want to get in the way of a really good conversation if it's going on. I don't want to interrupt that. So once you've sort of, you know, fed in the initial questions and you've got people to know each other, ideally you want to just leave them to it, and people just like listening to interesting conversations, don't they? Mm-hmm. And then I'm there really to try and anticipate perhaps what the average person listening or watching is thinking at this moment, or if they're using some really technical language, you know, as philosophers and scientists sometimes do, just to ask people to explain.
You're the layperson in the room.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, the advantage is it does mean I don't necessarily have to know the subject inside out to be able to host a show, because I sort of see myself as being in the same position as many listeners, and so I'm going to expect my guests to kind of help me understand and engage with this particular subject. It helps if I've done some reading on what we're discussing or debating, but in general I find actually just letting them lead things and hopefully just pushing the direction, the conversation in the right directions occasionally, but without, you know, stepping in too much, that's a good way to go. And it does mean that people hear that, you know, the people you've got on. I'm there every week, so people will hear me if they listen for a long time, and they'll hear my views on things eventually. But at the same time, one of the nice compliments I've had on the show has been that very often new listeners to the show won't know necessarily where I stand, even on Christianity, until, you know, they've listened for a while, and then and then they'll hear me say, well, I am a Christian and this is what I believe. But you know, in a way, trying to keep kind of neutral myself as a moderator in this context is quite important, where I can just try and get the best out of both sides, whatever they believe. And that's what I try to do.
Well, I have to say, you do it that. You are successful, at least from what I've seen. I do notice that you go over things in a way that me as a listener is like, oh, I was going to ask that, or I was wondering that, or I needed clarification on that. So good job in that sense. But I do notice that you are very good at being impartial. So how do you do that? Is it difficult, or do you find it like easy?
I personally find it reasonably easy. There are sometimes definitely some issues and subjects where I tend to wade in more with my own opinions, but generally speaking, often it's the Christians who feed this back to me. They say, I would really struggle to do that, to remain impartial when I hear someone saying something I really disagree with, you know. But in a way, you know, I that's the reason I've brought someone else in, hopefully a decent person on the opposite side who can put the opposite case. And so I've got to let them do that. I can't do all the arguing myself, even if it's tempting to do that sometimes. Right. So that's the idea. And the fact is, you have to let the cards fall where they'll fall in a discussion. You can't engineer it so that your guy comes out on top or anything like that.
Because you'll be called out like 100%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think you have to, you know. Because it is because I've got both sides listening. You know, if it was only Christians listening, maybe I would be tempted to kind of, you know, engineer it for in their favor.
The agnostics and atheists keep you honest.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll be answerable to them if they hear me kind of, you know, softballing the Christian and giving the hard questions to the atheist, or vice versa. So I think that's important. It's for the integrity of what we're trying to do in establishing this kind of thing. But I'm not hiding at the same time, you know, my personal beliefs, and I wouldn't want to. So I guess the other side of it is as well, I'm just I guess pretty confident in what I do believe. And so even if I hear someone, you know, making strident criticisms of Christianity, I rarely these days hear anything from a skeptical atheist or critic that I haven't heard in some form before somewhere else, and which I think there's probably a pretty good answer to in some way. So it doesn't kind of, I don't have that sort of knee-jerk reaction of fear that I think some Christians do have when they hear arguments and objections, which they can't immediately answer. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when you often get people kind of getting annoyed or anxious or ducking conversations. I just think, look, you know, these questions have been around forever. They'll continue to be around. We might not settle it on this show, but I'm not, I don't think, you know, I'm happy to let questions hang in the air unresolved if that's what needs to happen on a show. We don't have to tie up all the loose ends. And there's plenty more episodes where we will continue to debate and discuss these ideas. So that gives me the confidence not to feel like I have to jump in and answer everything or make sure that, you know, one side wins or anything like that. Yeah.
Okay, this is, again, I want to keep going with, tips for being a good host. But that's like a very, you know, for me, I have to remember the audience. So I actually... The main reason why I wanted to speak with you is because I have, as I've gotten older and less black and white in my thinking, I have really stepped away from enjoying debates. I mean, it's not that I don't like them, but I don't enjoy being near them for me personally, because so the example I'll give is not really a personal one, but I remember in one of my history classes learning about the Islamic occupation of Spain. Oh, where is this going, Andrew? I promise it will have to do with this. But so they, you know, they worked really well together. It's one of the examples of how in history of Islam and Christianity living relatively peacefully. And they would host debates. And whoever was in power at the time, that's who would win. The Christians or the Muslims. It just depended on who was the one holding the power. And I kind of, I don't know, it's not exactly that, because it's not like you just explained why you don't try to engineer it so that the Christians always win. But it feels like that to me a little bit, like everyone's going to go away saying, oh, I have this spot, and that, of course, so-and-so clearly won. Like, oh my goodness, I have spoken to people on the Sam Harris, Jordan Peterson debate on, was it Truth? Is that it? That was it. That was just the one thing. They could not get past it. And I've spoken to both sides, and clearly Sam Harris came over top. Yeah. No, it was actually Peterson got the upper hand. I've heard both. So I feel, plus I really, really, really enjoy and feel something deep in my soul when you have a really honest conversation by you, whether watching it or whether it's you, you know, people being so open to, like, I just don't know, and I want to know and glean what you have. And you have both of those types.
I think I get what you're saying, Andrea. I think you're right. I myself have had a similar thing where I'm not so interested these days in the typical debate format, i.e.
you host the kind of a point show where they format. Do that.
I know I do, but I prefer to use the word conversation. I rarely actually use the word debate to talk about the shows I do these days, because a debate is much more that classic sort of, I'm defending this point, I'm defending this point. You both get 20 minutes and then there'll be rebuttals and then counter rebuttals and whatever. And that's a very sort of stylized way of doing something, and it's really a way that is plays to a certain type of debate scenario, point scoring scenario. What I think, and generally I found even in the public sphere, those kinds of formal debates have gone out of fashion a bit. People are much more doing what I've been doing on the show for a long time now, which is that more kind of informal conversational kind of thing, which is kind of how those Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson conversations ended up, didn't they, when they went on
maybe
stage.
I just call them debates because I'm on the higher in the agreeableness spectrum. And I'm just like,
there's still a point that's being debated, but it's done in a more conversational manner. And I think the way that happens does depend so much on the individuals, the characters. And so if you get two people who you know are going to be like this, you know, butting up against each other, you're going to have one kind of an interaction, and it's going to be quite black and white, probably. Mm-hmm. What I think is more interesting sometimes is when you get the people who are kind of actually a bit more closer together. There's a bit of overlap mm-hmm. between their thinking, but they're not fully on board with each other's position. And then you get these more nuanced ones. You get a little bit more grey areas. You get a bit more of a human conversation, because mm-hmm. Most of us don't go into conversations knowing exactly what we believe about everything and being able to defend it down to the last point. We're usually kind of still thinking things through and trying to come up with ourselves exactly how we think about these issues. And I quite like that when that happens on a show. So, for instance, you know, a good recent one might be I did a Big Conversation episode. So the Big Conversation is an unbelievable show, but it's one that we do in partnership with the John Templeton Foundation. Okay. And I had N.T. Wright, who's a well-known British theologian and thinker, with Douglas Murray, who's quite a well-known cultural critic mm-hmm. here in the UK and world now. Mm-hmm. And Douglas Murray is what he would call a Christian atheist. So mm-hmm. he was a Christian at one time. He lost his faith. But he very much values and sees the value of Christianity. He's quite in a Jordan Peterson mold in many ways. Mm-hmm. And obviously Tom Wright is a committed Christian. But there was sort of, it wasn't your kind of new atheist versus fundamentalist Christian kind of dialogue. It was much more interesting and nuanced than that, because there was a meeting of minds. There was a lot that they agreed on, mm-hmm. but there was this issue of, but is it really true? And uh-huh. and for me, that kind of discussion is often much more interesting, because you're not just rehearsing the same old type debate sometimes, you know, about does God exist. It's much more something that's personal. There was a lot of personal stories shared. You got a sense of who they were and why this stuff mattered. So I like that. I like when there's a kind of a meeting of minds, but there's still an issue to be debated. And I guess we do the whole range of those things on the show over the years, you know.
So do you help facilitate that sort of non-combative, I guess, air about the space? Like, is that something that you try to cultivate specifically, or does it just happen naturally?
It is so much down to the guests, which guests come on the show is down to me. So in a way, who I choose to put against each other will kind of frame the way the discussion happens. So I know that if I get such and such a person opposite such and such a person, it's going to be one of those sparky fist fights. You know, mm-hmm. I know if it's two people who are closer together, perhaps they're more academic, a bit more, you know, collegial, then it'll be a very friendly kind of discussion. Mm. So to some extent, it, you know, once I've put the people in the ring, it's sort of out of my hands. They'll kind of interact with each other the way they want to. I will try to keep things civil, obviously, if things are getting quite antagonistic. And if they're too peaceful, I'll try and throw in some.
Oh, you're trying to instigate it. Okay. Keep it interesting.
You know, no one wants to listen to two people agreeing with each other on everything.
But like, so, what I do, I guess that's just me. I just am non-combative. I'm, you know, oh, can we just all get along, please? But you're right. You're right. It's hard. It's hard to leave with the questions. But it's mm-hmm. good. It's a mix of hard and good. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I enjoy it. And I mean, there are times, you know, when I will put my hands up and say I probably picked the wrong mix of people. Like, I remember one show, this is going back quite a long time now, but I had a Muslim in studio opposite a Christian who was on the phone. Uh-huh. And they were both like really poles apart. And it was a really explosive issue they were debating, which was, did Muhammad exist?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Whoa. So
you went there.
And it got
you guys
to the point where insults were being thrown in both directions. And I just had to at one point just pause the recording and say, guys, we can't go on if this continues, you know, because it was just descending into, you know, name calling and all kinds of things. So so sometimes it goes horribly wrong. Yes. But
see,
so
we don't, I didn't see that. Like, we don't see those now. So you're like, oh, go in the archives.
Yeah.
for those.
Yeah, you go in the archive. I could probably dig that one out. It was several years ago, but yeah.
Oh, that's actually kind of like, it's good to know where people start. I can't believe you okayed that discussion topic, but you're like, we wanted to see.
I know. It is kind of obviously down to me as to what I think is a good discussion topic. And that one was probably one of the more explosive ones that we've ever done. And inevitably, when you've got someone making the case that Muhammad didn't exist, you're going to inevitably be inviting some, well, you know, to put it mildly, it gets a lot of Muslims very stirred up, understandably. Yep. Yep. So you have to be careful that you're not needlessly provoking with some of these things. And I've never aimed to be a shock jock or anything like that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I do like, maybe it's me, but I like to hear at least some of the discussions have a bit of a grit to them, have a bit of, you know, interesting disagreement.
No, it's not just you. I'm the weird one. Like, I'm the... Can we just please? So, okay, what is the, in general, for the unbelievable and the big conversation, and sorry, the big conversation is within the realm of unbelievable?
Yeah, it is. It's okay. I like to say it's the big conversation from unbelievable.
From unbelievable, okay.
But it's unbelievable with bells and whistles on, basically.
Okay, okay, yes. So what is the goal, the overall goal?
Well, I think there's a couple of goals. The first is just to, you know, make a podcast and radio show and video that's interesting and entertaining, that people will want to listen to or watch. But secondly, and perhaps more importantly, it's a way, I think, of helping people of different perspectives on faith to understand each other better. And doing that in a way where you have genuinely substantive conversations rather than just the, you know, vox pops and sound bites that often characterize this when it comes to blogs or social media and that kind of thing. So when you get two people sitting down for an hour to talk things through, you know, you do move beyond some of those easy mischaracterizations that are out there between atheists and Christians and people of other faiths. So that's one reason, is just to help us understand each other. And I'm not expecting people to change their mind in the course of an hour of conversation. And I'm not expecting listeners to change their mind either necessarily. But what I do find is, very often, even if an atheist doesn't change their mind in the course of listening to Unbelievable, or, you know, if they've been following us for years or something, they may not become a Christian. But I think what they will realize is that Christianity isn't just for, you know, soft-headed, delusional people, that actually there is a strong intellectual tradition to it. And I think they come away often with a newfound respect for Christianity, because they will hear people making a robust defense of the Christian faith, and they'll realize that there are, you know, some interesting arguments for it. Now, they may feel, nevertheless, that the atheists bring better, more cogent arguments on the other side, but at least I think it opens the door to people realizing, maybe I could take this seriously. Likewise, my hope is that for Christians, it will stop them seeing atheists or skeptics as somehow the enemy, or indeed too easily kind of thinking, well, they just reject it because of sin, or because, you know, they've chosen to rebel or something like that. But take seriously the issues and intellectual objections that atheists and non-Christians have. And I think in the process, it helps them to build a more of a respectful friendship and relationship with their own skeptical friends and neighbors, because I think they have a much better understanding of where people are coming from. So for me, that's really important. And in the process of that, occasionally people do change their mind, you know, and so I do know non-believers, atheists, skeptics who, not just through Unbelievable, but through a process that has sometimes involved the show, they have crossed the line to coming to faith. I also know people who would say to you, hey, well, I was a Christian but I was starting to doubt it all. And when I listened to Unbelievable, it only cemented that journey and I've gone out of faith, you know. So people are the traffic goes in both directions, and I've never felt it's my duty to make sure that it only goes in one direction, because otherwise I just do a show where I just talk to Christians, you know.
Right.
But I think people can handle, people are grown up enough to hear two intelligent people debating an issue and to make their own mind up. And I just leave it to them and to God, in a sense, because I believe obviously there is a God and that God is involved in this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
But I can, all I think I'm being called to do is make sure that two decent representatives on both sides of an issue are having a fair conversation, and I leave the results to the people listening and to God. And for me, that's enough. That's enough. I don't feel like I have to have some predetermined outcome every time that that happens. I just see what happens, and you know, and I think that's a grown up way of handling the conversation on faith.
Mm. How has the conversation on faith, now that we're bringing it up, how has that shifted? Because I know that the sort of subtitle of, I can't remember whether it's The Big Conversation or Unbelievable, about you talk about meaning. Meaning is in there.
Mm.
And so maybe not necessarily faith, but very often faith is, meaning is found in faith. So you've been doing this for a while, and I mean, you've spoken to Dawkins and Dennett and some of the horsemen of the new atheist movement. So how has the conversation, like not necessarily the topics, but like maybe, but the direction of where people are going in the past number of years, how has that shifted?
I think that has been a really interesting aspect of this, the way the conversation has changed. Because when I started the show back in 2005, believe it or not, so that was just before Dawkins released The God Delusion. And that book really marked...
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it was 2006 he released that. And that really marked, I would say, the high water mark of the new atheist movement in the 2000s. That was when you were seeing all these best-selling books by Sam Harris and Dennett and Dawkins, you know, and lots of people getting behind that. And this, you know, because of the internet, a lot of skeptics and atheists banding together, and we started to see atheist conferences and Skepticon and all these sorts of things taking place. And there was this real kind of movement towards this kind of, what became known as New Atheism, a more kind of dogmatic form of atheism where religion wasn't just false, but it was also dangerous and needed to be stamped out. And it was obviously, a lot of that was in reaction to things like 9/11 and, you know, people who were unhappy about creationism in schools and that kind of thing. So that was kind of where the conversation was when the show began. And so we had a lot of those debates with, you know, hardline atheists versus Christians. And it was all about, does God exist? You know, can science and faith, you know, come together, and all of those sorts of debates. But I think now, 15 years on, it's actually quite a different set of questions and kinds of conversations that people are having. I think in a way, the new atheism actually has gotten old, funnily enough. It's a sort of, it kind of ran out of steam, I think, probably 5 or 10 years ago, because it kind of ate itself in the end. It got very... there was a lot of infighting between all the different atheist factions, because even though they could agree that God didn't exist, there was then a lot of disagreement about what you do in the aftermath of that, because you had the people who wanted, well, our movement needs to be all about, you know, justice and rights and feminism and LGBT issues and everything. And others were like, no, that's not what atheism is about. Atheism is all about free thought and skepticism and rational inquiry. And, you know, we just have to go where the science leads us and that sort of thing. And you had all these warring camps coming out and all these quite high profile atheists falling out with each other quite dramatically. And, you know, people storming off stage on conferences and things like this. And the whole movement kind of imploded in a strange sort of way, so that by the time, you know, 10 years into the show, if an atheist came on and mentioned Richard Dawkins or something, that they're most likely to be saying it in a kind of, oh, I'm not a Richard Dawkins kind of atheist, i.e. I'm not one of those really angry sort of atheists who just deny the importance of religion.
I don't even think Richard Dawkins is a Richard Dawkins anymore. Yeah.
Well, he's almost become a caricature of himself, hasn't he? That's the problem. But that's the thing is I think in a way the conversation has moved on, because what you're seeing much more now with the Sam Harrises and the Jordan Petersons and the secular thinkers are no longer so interested in having those, you know, debates about does God exist. It's more kind of in the absence of Christianity or the Judeo-Christian worldview, how do we live? How are we going to find meaning? What is life about? And in a funny way, I think actually some of the most interesting secular voices are now re-engaging religion. And they're not saying it's true, but they are saying we shouldn't throw it out because actually it's here for a reason. And there's a very interesting conversation going on with people like you said, you were, you know, reading Tom Holland and listening to him a lot. You know, again, someone who would say they have completely changed their mind about Christianity because they realized as a secular non-believing person, they were nevertheless, their values in his view are completely shaped by the Judeo-Christian story that brought the West to where it is. And so I think there's just a lot of that going on. Lots of interesting conversations about, you know, whether we need Christianity, whether we've thrown it out too quickly. What do we do in its absence? How, you know, is there any end to these culture wars we're now fighting in the absence of any binding narrative because everyone is finding their own identity and their own meaning and their own purpose. And often those, you know, butt up against each other in difficult ways. So that's been interesting. And I have been following, you know, and a lot more of the conversations I do on Unbelievable have been in that domain of bringing those kinds of thinkers on to discuss those kinds of issues, because we're sort of now in that post-new atheism period where we're actually asking, well, yeah, we all accept that Christianity in the West has been in decline for a long time, but what's it going to be replaced with? That's the big question at this point. And could it come back as well is another interesting one.
So I'm glad you brought up Jordan Peterson, and I think that he's the first unbelievable person I listened to on your show. Like, that's where how I found you guys, you know. I was hungry for Peterson. I had to find all of the stuff he's, you know, back when I, but before all of this in 2016, it was like I was just trying to get my hands on all of anything that he did, and so it was a debate, but it wasn't a debate, sorry, it was a conversation. But to use the proper words.
If it was Peterson you were hearing, it would have been the very first of those big conversations, actually, because he was the very first guest on our first season.
Long time listener, I guess.
Yeah, but that was
I had no idea where it was in it. Okay, yeah, okay, yeah, then I guess it must have been 18. He seems to have tapped into something and brought out something in the culture. So that's, I mean, you were sort of talking about it in the context of the New Atheists and the fallout, but with the context of Jordan Peterson, and you guys did mention this. I watched the other day a discussion with you and Tom Holland, and I can't remember his name, but he wrote that book about the Bible and integrating it.
How it makes sense of life. Yeah, Andrew Wallerton.
Okay. Man, I bet you have a lot of names that you have to remember. It's like, don't you remember me? I was on. Do you remember my name? Good. I'll be checking in. Anyway, so Andrew, you can feel good about that. It was brought up about how, you know, Peterson sort of brought up this inquiry, this way of thinking. I've heard people call him the modern C.S. Lewis, but I don't know that. I mean, maybe comparable in what he's tapping into, because I know C.S. Lewis has his own story about coming to faith. But I'm wondering, what am I wondering? You know, just Jordan Peterson, go. No. So what is it that he, what is the what is why what is it that he's bringing up and what you have kind of seen the aftermath of?
Yeah, and why are Christians so interested in him? I think is another one because I think it is that whole thing of he's recognizing as a kind of secular psychologist that actually life cannot be simply boiled down to a purely naturalistic understanding of nature. He sort of seems to, in a very almost personal way, be living in this tension between the kind of the man of science and kind of aware, very aware of a spiritual reality of sort of a dimension to life that can't simply be boiled down to physics and nature. And that's why, you know, he's gone into these clashes with people like Sam Harris and so on, because in a way he's kind of someone from their world, you know, a secular scientific kind of thinker, but who's asking very pertinent questions about whether we can live without God, without religion, without the kind of meaning that those things give us. And he's kind of, you know, given Christians so many sort of opportunities to sort of wonder, well, is he on a journey? Will he finally convert to Christianity?
Oh yes, you know, I've heard the wonderings.
This long guessing game, you know, and he's really stringing it out for us, because, you know, there are so many times when people have been sure, you know, oh yes, he seems to be on the verge of some breakthrough, but who knows? I mean, that's ultimately between Jordan Peterson and God. But what I valued about him is that he has been asking in a very public forum really important questions, and just this, the phenomenon of, you know, especially before he became sick, the thousands of people who flocked, especially young men, to see him in these theaters and just to talk for 2 hours, you know, on the meaning of life and, you know, biblical imagery and
yes, paying money to go listen to Peterson, exactly, to go talk about the Bible.
I don't know how many pastors were like green with envy that Jordan Peterson could make people turn out in their thousands to talk about the Bible.
Yes. And,
you know, they're struggling to draw a crowd for free on a Sunday morning. But but, you know, but I think the reason he did that was because he was just being very honest and sort of almost emotionally vulnerable at the same time. And it obviously hit a nerve with a lot of people, and I think the reason it hit that nerve is because for the last however many years, a generation has basically been told by the kind of secularist, new atheist, enlightened kind of cadre that it'll all be fine because science is going to solve everything and we're going to go into this wonderful utopian future without religion where science basically will bring this light, you know, of reason and objectivity. And I think people realize that actually, in actual fact, what happened is the advance of science and technology, as wonderful as it is in so many ways, has actually also brought all kinds of problems with it. We don't know how to handle it. We're more depressed than ever. We are fighting, you know, with each other all the time on social media. And suddenly Jordan Peterson comes along and says, no, science doesn't have all the answers. And here's some ancient wisdom that we need to recover. And suddenly this is, and it's not saying anything terribly, you know, in the big scheme of things, novel, but he's saying it in a way that evidently just had this mass appeal. And suddenly people are coming up to him saying, you've changed my life. I can't believe it, you know. And it's almost like he just put his finger on something that this kind of postmodern itch where people are just so dissatisfied with their life because despite the promises of this technological age we live in, it's not living up to those promises. And suddenly here comes someone who's just sort of says the emperor has no clothes and all those things you've been told about the way, you know, life will be wonderful in this age, they're not true. And here's some things you actually need to do to make sense of life. And what's interesting is a lot of what he's saying overlaps so neatly with the Christian view of meaning and reality. And that's why I think lots of Christians have hailed him as the new Messiah, you know,
Peterson,
leading people towards, you know, I've heard of people, you know, who have come to Christian faith through Jordan Peterson, even though he himself still remains a bit of aloof to exactly what
he's
that
the voice crying in the wilderness, and he's something John the Baptist like sending, you know, will you who are you, are you really the Messiah?
So I've found all that fascinating as I've tracked that, and I've had him on the show and written a few articles about him, and obviously talked about him with other people. So I think that's and we wait to see, you know, what happens next, really. But I feel like that's, it's opened up, you know, as I was saying earlier, just a new conversation, and there's a sort of almost a new willingness, I find, of a lot of people to take Christianity seriously, because he's kind of put it on the map again, and he's managed to move the conversation from this very wooden, dogmatic, fundamentalist form of Christianity that the new atheists loved to hold up as the typical example. And he's much more having dialogues and recognizing these kind of very significant intellectual tradition of Christianity. And so when he, you know, does a discussion with Jonathan Padgett, you know, who's an Orthodox Christian who...
I've spoken with him a couple of times on my channel.
So you know all about him. So, you know, so I just really appreciate Peterson for doing that, for kind of profiling in a way that there's a, you know, there is a significant tradition here, and it's worth looking into and talking to and taking seriously. So yeah, that's been good.
Well, it seems... So this is... Maybe I'm really paying attention very much to the trajectory of the sort of cultural feeling, at least for myself, and the feeling on Twitter, and the feeling on my Bridges of Meaning Discord group. So this is this is a sample size. This isn't necessarily everybody, but so there's the first Peterson wave, which is you know, pre-sickness for him. And second Peterson wave, which is what we're in right now. That's what I'm calling it. So, and it's not just me calling it. So I interviewed Jonathan Peugeot and Paul Van Der Klee a couple weeks ago about the second Peterson wave, because I was like, Peugeot, I need to talk to you about your discussion with Peterson, because that's one of the most honest and open conversations on the internet I've ever witnessed, was the discussion they had. And it seems like he seems different, but it's not just him. Like before, it was, you know, the intellectual dark web like springs up around him, and it's about freedom of speech, and like that's why I started my YouTube channel. That's why I was like, I'm a mother of three, and I don't have a job. I needn't worry about losing my job and my voice. I'm like, I'll stand up and speak my mind, and that's how it started, because that's what it was about. You know, and then Peterson sort of had to leave in because of his wife's sickness, and then him, and then I started moving past the IDW, as they were called, and wanting to search for. I actually was like, okay, let's look for meaning, and then it just brought me right. Like I'm a Christian, but I wanted to go along Peterson's path. And eventually it led me over to Paul Van Der Klee and his Bridges of Meaning Discord group. And that's where I encountered, there's a mix of atheists and agnostics and Christians. It's more or less mostly Christian, but it's definitely a mix enough to have it stirred. So there's the salty, and there's the fresh water. They call it the estuary.
Great.
So that brought me there. But now Peterson's back, and he seems, well, obviously he is different, but it's not just him who's different. It seems like people, at least where I'm focusing, so by people, it could just be me, but like it seems like people are less focused on the concerns of the first Peterson wave, and this it's a little bit less sure, you know. It's a little bit more just wrestling. It's like Jacob wrestling with the angel of the Lord.
I think in a funny way, you know, I love the way you refer to it as the first Peterson wave and the second Peterson wave. It's like COVID or something.
It's come upon us.
have gone up.
It's a different strain.
And then you've got your real Peterson fans who were like there before he was like stratospheric, you know. Mm-hmm. I was around in the, you know,
before, I've heard him in 2016, 2017.
But anyway,
before the Kathy Newman discussion.
Pre Kathy Newman. I think you're right though, that it was interesting, wasn't it, that he had to drop out of public life for that, what was it, year, 18-month period. Mm-hmm. And then when he's come back, it's been obviously this gradual return, and just having to take things slowly, and in a sense, whereas before I think it was like this frenetic activity, touring the world, doing all these things, I think being forced to slow down, I get the sense that it's forced him to kind of decide, well, what do I want to do now with this legacy, with this platform I've been given, and how can I use it given my limited resources, which I've just experienced just how limited they are and how close to death he came and so on. Mm-hmm. what do I want, what conversations do I want to have with who, and I just think he seems to be just opening up and having the kinds of conversations that he thinks are going to ultimately be meaningful and enjoyable and have sort of a lasting impact. And whenever I listen to, you know, I subscribe to his podcast and listen to quite a few of his shows, and there's always something, you know, he's so good at connecting with people in different spheres. So whether it's a Jonathan Pajew, who's a Christian, or a Stephen Fry, you know, who's, you know, an out and out atheist, but he seems to be able to find those connection points and bring the best, in my view, out of a Stephen Fry, and the most interesting, and just have those kinds of, you know, that ability to connect and have honest, quite meaningful conversations. And again, I think it's because he doesn't feel like he has to prove anything to anyone, that he can have these really honest, emotionally vulnerable conversations. And I think that is a game changer. I think people feel like they're listening to something quite real, and authentic, and not just another, you know, too intellectual sparring, which a lot of podcasts can feel like sometimes. And it feels like, you know, and I think that's why he's always connected actually with this audience, is because they feel like he's saying important things, and he's saying them like they really do matter to him and to the people he's, and he cares about the people he's talking to, and he cares about the situations. They're not just abstract social discussions, you know? So I pray for Jordan Peterson. I think, you know, he's, whether he would see it this way or not, I think he has, you know, been someone that God has used in all kinds of interesting ways to speak into culture and to move things on. And he's not perfect. None of us are, but I think he's, you know, had a very important influence, in doing that. And I'm glad to see, in a way, that, because in a way that the heat has died down a bit around him, people are able to just sort of have more sensible conversations around him, and he's not provoking quite as much animosity. As he did, you know, in that first wave. Yeah.
Well, I like that you said the heat has died down, because that is a good way of describing it. But so the way I see this relating to you and your podcast and your what the conversations that you host, is it's bleeding through to, so people are more open to searching for something. And so, and then you guys can come in and be like, hey, here's something, and here's another something, and they're both being, I really do see them as connected, because he is sort of primed these, like, people. And for me, he helped me to understand the connection between, like, evolution and the stories and the myths, and to see that they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, and to see how humans developed in the Bible alongside of our human development, and caused me to and opened up questions to make me want to search, and that is how I found it. I literally found you guys because of him. Yeah. And so do you, I don't know how, I mean, of course you connect with your audience seeing the YouTube comments and you do live discussions. Do you see this sort of wave from like a sort of the Peterson style openness, I guess? So he sent them out and now, but he is John the Baptist, it feels like it. So do you feel like that's come to you guys over what you're doing?
I mean, especially as you say, I mean, that show with Peterson that kicked off that first season of The Big Conversation, kind of, you know, because it went out at the time when Peterson was just really blowing up all over the place, it did bring in a whole new audience. And it's had like 2.5 million views or something now on, so it's by far our most popular YouTube video. But the what it did, you know, it meant that a lot of people started listening to the show, and I kind of started to respond to those people as they started to get in touch and realizing, okay, yeah, people want to have these conversations on meaning, and where we're kind of not having just that, as I say, that typical does God exist, doesn't God exist, here's a philosophical argument for and against kind of debate.
But 10 years ago.
But more a kind of okay, we don't necessarily agree on that subject, but let's talk about how it, you know, whether it matters for culture, for society, what it means to live in the society we live in, and so on. And that's where we've seen that very fruitful conversation, I think, that's quite a friendly one between people. And I've seen listeners, you know, so I'm thinking of one person who's a listener out in Australia who got in touch with me a few months after that Jordan Peterson episode went out. And he said, I kind of grew up in a very nominally Christian background, but have more or less been an atheist all my life. And he said, but, you know, now into my 40s, I something clicked when I started hearing about Jordan Peterson, listening to Jordan Peterson. And then I found your show. And then that led me on to suddenly all of this sort of area of Christianity that I never realized existed, and arguments for faith and interesting people talking about interesting subjects. It sort of opened up the whole world to him. And this guy called Dean in Australia, who, you know, wrote a beautiful blog. He's a great writer on the way that The Unbelievable Show had kind of opened up this new world for him. And he wasn't sure where he was on the journey, but he just knew that he was, it had opened up a kind of a new way of thinking about Christianity that he kind of hadn't realized was there before. And as you say, that was all really Jordan Peterson priming someone to go on that journey. And I don't know exactly where that journey will end up for Dean himself, but it was that story is one among many, I would say, where the questions and the approach that Jordan Peterson has had have been a perfect primer to then say, okay, well, are there some tangible answers in the Christian story? Could it be true? Could it be that, you know, this character that Peterson finds so endlessly fascinating, Jesus, as some kind of archetype of the great hero and redeemer and everything else, what if he really was that, you know? And I think it just opens up, you know, this vista, this possibility for so many people. And I think, you know, I'm writing a book on this very subject, actually. I think the church is standing at a really unique moment where there is the potential that sea of faith that Matthew Arnold said had washed out on Dover Shore might come back in again, because that's the way things happen. You know, people can only live kind of without meaning for so long. And eventually, I think the church needs to be there ready to say, we've still got something. It's 2,000 years old, but it's still pretty relevant. And it might just be the thing you've been looking for all the time. So yeah, that's why I'm excited still about Unbelievable 15 years in. I feel like there's still a really interesting conversation, and I want the church to be at the center of it and engaging with all the different sides of it as intelligently as it can. And just be aware that despite the, you know, the well publicized decline of Christianity in the West and, you know, the empty pews and everything, that's not the full story. People people haven't become less religious in a funny way. If anything, you know,
well, we've seen them become very religious about different things.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, yeah, those sorry for the long meandering thoughts, but we are in a kind of interesting moment where there's potentially, you know, I don't see why we couldn't see a revival, you know, to use the old fashioned word, but something that where people are returning, I feel, to a kind of new appreciation of Christianity, and who knows where that could lead.
That's what I'm trying to understand on lately. The guests I've had on my channel is I'm trying to understand what is happening and why in this meaning space. And in your case, that's why it's like, why are conversations important and why do they matter? But framed with this meaning thing, it seems like listening to a discussion, especially one where people are open, like you mentioned about the Douglas Murray anti right discussion. I did listen to that and it was excellent. Anyway, and like that sort of, I'm not sure I am here, but I'm open. And, you know, it's so there's something about it that makes, at least for me, draws me in. And I imagine it's drawing other people in, you know, the honest conversations that you talk about. And I've heard, okay, have you heard of John Vervaeke?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he, you know, it's like dialogue. It's like dialogos, like, you know, to pull in like logos from, well, obviously from John 1:1. But like Peterson really, you know, emphasizes that logos thing. But like dialogos, like the two minds, two divine entities, sort of like exchanging ideas. It seems like that's important. But I'm having trouble. Like, but I don't know why. And I know that you could give reasons why. But I'm having trouble explaining why, in the core of our being, it's important. So maybe you can take a stab at it.
No, I do. I think it is. I think, you know, Christianity, in a way, you know, as the Apostle Paul put it, is it's about knowing and being known. It's a relational thing. And the problem is, I believe that's how we're fundamentally set up as human beings to be. But the problem is, on a naturalistic worldview, the Dawkins type of worldview, all we can do is know. We can't be known. We can know about the natural world. We can examine it, but it doesn't speak back to us. It just is what it is. But I think meaning is when there is a kind of two-way conversation, in a way. It's about understanding the world, but being understood by the world as well. It's knowing our place within it. It's making sense of our place within it. That we aren't just here as a sort of random byproduct of, you know, evolution. Not that evolution is necessarily wrong, but that if the story is simply that we turned up as a completely random byproduct of it, then it's no surprise that we struggle to make sense of life, because ultimately there isn't an overarching narrative or a meaning to it. We just have to make the best of it that we can. But I think most people don't. I think the reason why the Petersons and so on have been so popular is because people don't feel like that. And that's why people make certain things ultimate, and they make meaning where they can find it in some political cause or ideology or whatever it might be. Those become sacrosanct. Those become almost religious in the place of, you know, Christianity. But I think ultimately everyone who's doing that, they're searching for this thing of knowing and being known. And that is, I think, where that logos comes in. It's the logos who orders things, orders life, orders you, makes sense of you, and who you can, but, you know, as John 1 says, became flesh, became knowable, so that we are known by the logos, but we can know the logos as well. And there's something very profound about that, something that for me is obviously at the very heart of Christian faith. And it's this idea that whatever life hands you, whatever place you find yourself in the story, in this world, there is this ability to be known, to be fully known. and to know. And that gives ultimate meaning, I think, to life. It gives a sense that it gives a perspective that means that there's a way of, I'm trying hard to put this into words really, but it's like,
you're doing an excellent job. Please continue.
It's that thing of sort of that you're not just speaking words that, you know, signify nothing, as Shakespeare put it. You know, it's not all sound and fury. There is a meaning to be grasped, and there's something that will speak back to us and make sense of us. That's at the heart of the Christian story for me. And that's why I think it's still profoundly attractive to people, because I think people are built that way. And when they don't have it, they're going to look for it in other places, as people do. But they'll be frustrated always because it won't fulfill in the way that I believe the Christian story is. You know, Blaise Pascal put it best and very simply when he said, there is a God-shaped hole in the heart of every person that cannot be filled by any created thing, but only through Jesus Christ, through God made known through Jesus Christ. Mm. And it's that God-shaped hole, you know, that's for me, it is there, and you can try and fill it with other things. You can try and explain it away, but it doesn't stop it being there, if you know what I mean. And something's got to fill it. And for me, you know, the Christian story makes sense of me in that kind of way. Yeah.
Mm. I was going to ask, like, the next thing. I was like, oh, so how have you been influenced or changed by the debates? But I'm remembering you said, yeah, I'm still a Christian, still a believer. Haven't been moved.
I made that the title of my book, which came out a few years ago. It was unbelievable. Why, after 10 years of talking with atheists, I'm still a Christian.
Oh, okay.
And I can say after 15 years now of talking with atheists, mm-hmm. I'm still a Christian. I mean, that's not to say I'm the same Christian that started that show 15 years ago, because we all change, we all evolve, we all, our thinking, you know, develops. So there's a whole host of things where I've definitely changed or nuanced my perspective. But if anything, you know, it's almost that my faith, I'd say, without wanting to sound grandiose, but it's gone to a deeper sort of place where it's not so dependent on this particular way of interpreting the Bible has to be true, otherwise, you know, it all goes kaput. But where I've got having all these conversations and seeing this sort of deeper sense of the way in which Christianity makes sense of us helps me, gives me a kind of a confidence, really, that there is an ultimate explanation. And I'm also fully aware of the masses of areas. The more you look into Christianity and atheism, you'll quickly become aware of all the things you don't know and all the great questions there are that you don't have good answers for, and all the things that will remain a mystery. And that's fine. I'm never going to claim to be able to sew up all the loose ends. But at the end of the day, I find the Christian story a compelling one. It makes sense to me. It makes sense of me in a way that atheism doesn't. And having had lots of these conversations with atheists, I understand why they take the position they do, but I don't find it either an intellectually or emotionally or spiritually fulfilling way of being in the world. And ultimately, we're more than just intellectual machines. We are people who have to live physically and socially and spiritually in the world as well. And for that, I just find, you know, I've never found a better way of doing that than the Christian story myself.
I think that maybe that's a good place to wrap up. So
great.
So thank you so much for chatting, and I'm so glad we got to the end here, because not because I want to be done. Oh my gosh. I mean, I really like the last bits of the things that you said. That really is like the heart of what I'm trying to understand and figure out as well. So thank you for sharing and being open and willing to discuss these things with me.
It was my absolute pleasure, Andrea. And I was pleased to be able to see the bangs in full video there.
I just recently got a haircut. Wow. So they're back. They're back.
They're
to
back.
Normal now.
They're back.
The COVID hair was, I mean, it was fine. Like, I made do, but, you know, everyone needs to know this. So I'm glad we went over it. Okay. Okay. Thanks so much, Desmond.
Great to talk to you.
If you would subscribe, that would be the bee's knees.